From the KTOO Newsroom, I'm Pablo Barros Peña with a local and statewide news update. The Central Council of Tlingit and Haida fireworks sale was a big hit from day one. Tlingit and Haida President Richard Chakyaish Peterson says the sale's soft opening on June 24th brought out a couple of hundred people.
Yeah, it was crazy. Sales have been doing very well, very brisk.
Peterson says it was hard to keep social distancing that first day, but the sales staff are making sure to keep customers safe. Money from the sale goes to services that the Central Council provides for tribal citizens throughout the year. But Peterson is also asking customers to be responsible about their fireworks.
Our staff's going to talk to you about being respectful and responsible neighbors, about lighting them off.
Juneau Fire Department Chief Rich Etheridge says the department most often gets calls about small grass fires around this time of year. He reminds anyone using fireworks to follow safety precautions.
Having responsible adults light them, keep them on the ground, don't relight dead fireworks, and don't point them in the direction of homes or other people.
The Central Council fireworks sale continues until tomorrow, until about 8 p.m., or until all the fireworks are sold out. And usually in the summer, there's a drop in demand for services for people experiencing homelessness, but service providers say that hasn't happened this year. The city already extended its contract with St. Vincent de Paul, the nonprofit that runs the emergency shelter, until mid-July. It also opened a new public campground where people can stay for free. Now the shelter's contract has been extended through September 15th, with the potential to go to the end of November.
Right now, we are averaging over 50 people a night at our shelter. The Mill Campground has 20 sites that have been full or almost full since the start of the summer.
That's St. Vincent's General Manager Dave Ringel. Normally, Juneau's emergency shelter opens from November to April on nights when the temperature is below freezing. But this year, it may not close at all. Ringel says the pandemic is having financial and psychological impacts on people who are already struggling. The Glory Hall homeless The Glory Hall homeless shelter downtown also reduced the number of people that can stay overnight to follow health recommendations. That's left more people looking for a place to sleep. St. Vincent moved the emergency shelter into the Juneau Arts and Culture Center in March to allow more space between beds.
It's the little factors that social distancing requires. It puts that much more stress on everybody, and we're still trying to adapt to it.
There is some relief on the horizon. Construction recently wrapped up on the second phase of Juneau's Housing First complex. The new wing with 32 additional apartments will double the number of vulnerable adults able to live there. In a proposal to use local CARES Act funding to pay local restaurants to prepare meals for community members experiencing food insecurity is making its way toward the Juneau Assembly. When it comes to race in Juneau schools, the conversation starts in the classroom. As national dialogues on race continue to evolve, the Juneau School District is grappling with how to best address race and equity in the classroom. I spoke to a Juneau woman who chronicled her experiences with racism in Juneau schools for this story. After watching protests unfold for Black lives in Alaska and across the country, Lacey Davis posted a video on Facebook about her experience of growing up Black in Juneau.
I live in a town that is very small, it's rather secluded, and but it's generally a really friendly place. The people here, for the most part, are very open-minded and accepting.
Davis graduated from Thunder Mountain High School in 2016. She moved to Juneau when she was 13. And she says, on her first day of middle school, a boy asked her if she wanted to be her friend so he could call her the N-word.
I didn't really understand the implications of it. I thought that he was just trying to be dumb and funny. But my dad was the one that had to tell me, like, no, this was wrong. And when somebody says that to you, they don't actually want to be your friend.
And that wasn't the only time Davis experienced racism in the classroom. A few weeks after starting high school at Thunder Mountain, one of her teachers spoke about former First Lady Michelle Obama's work on encouraging Black women to understand that they're powerful and beautiful.
A boy sitting behind me in history class said, yeah, except they're not, though. He said it quiet enough so that the teacher at the front wasn't able to hear, but I heard it, and I turned around and I looked at him, and he just looked directly at me and smiled.
Davis didn't report that incident to the school. She says she felt like her experiences weren't serious enough. Juno School District Superintendent Bridget Weiss saw Davis's video. She says she wishes Davis would have reported what happened to her. And even though that was a missed opportunity for the school, Weiss says that she hopes that students would report inappropriate comments and behaviors.
We want to support students, so we would hope that she would, or a student in her situation, would share her experience. And so we have multiple ways we can respond. Discipline is one of them.
According to school policy, derogatory language or any other negative racial comment is considered verbal harassment and bullying. It can also fall under threats to students, staff, and members of the school community. These are called Category 1 infractions, which could mean a meeting with a parent, suspension, and even expulsion. But Weiss says that in recent years, the district has put in place new protocols for so-called restorative practices when it comes to issues related to race. Things like conflict resolution, reducing harmful behavior, and holding individuals accountable. They're meant to repair harm, build healthy relationships, and ultimately address the needs of the school community.
Where there really is an opportunity for students to have a more productive, conducive conversation, if it's appropriate there, or with a student individually if the two students shouldn't or couldn't be together.
While Juno schools don't have an office or department to deal specifically with racial equity, Weiss published a statement on the district's website committing the district to anti-racism. In it, Weiss writes that the district acknowledges that it, quote, is not exempt from racial injustices and that each child deserves better. The statement also mentions a new strategic plan that highlights narrowing the achievement gap and building a more respectful district. The district also has an equity workbook for families and a team of cultural specialists to advocate for Alaska Native students. Still, Weiss says that's not enough to address race in the classroom for other students of color.
We are not finding the right ways yet to support them to achieve at the same level as other students, so we're working on that.
As for Davis, who is now a working professional, she hasn't heard from the district since she published her video or from the boys who said those things to her and about black women. She doesn't expect them to apologize.
I just want people to be able to have that closure with themselves, if that makes sense. Like, to be able to acknowledge what they did within themselves and then move forward from there.
And with the escalating nationwide conversation on race, Weiss says the district is looking at what next steps make sense to prioritize learning environments that are supportive of every student. In Juneau, I'm Pablo Arauz Peña. And just a quick correction for that story. Davis said that first experience happened in high school, not her first day of middle school. Additionally, Davis said that she did not report the incidents because her issues with anxiety played a factor as to why she didn't report them. The correction has been published on KTOO.org. And Alaska recorded 50 new coronavirus cases from Wednesday, but no new deaths or hospitalizations. It's the biggest one-day increase in infections in Alaska since the state began tracking the disease in March, breaking the prior record set earlier this week. The new COVID-19 cases include 39 Alaskans and 11 non-residents. The latest count follows a series of double-digit one-day increases in Alaska for much of June, and it comes as case numbers surge throughout much of the country in the days leading up to the 4th of July weekend. By the end of Wednesday, the total number of COVID-19 infections among Alaskans topped 1,000. Just over 50% of them are considered recovered. Most of the newly diagnosed Alaskans are from the South Central region. The newly diagnosed non-residents tested positive across the state from Unalaska to Petersburg to Anchorage. At least four work in the seafood industry. And there are 18 people in the hospital with COVID-19 or suspected to have the disease. Despite Alaska's rising COVID-19 infections, the state continues to have one of the country's lowest case counts per capita. And Anchorage officials and trade groups have released new suggested guidelines they hope bars and restaurants will adopt to slow the spread of the virus. The Anchorage Daily News reported city health officials say several entertainment and hospitality businesses in the municipality have been linked to recent COVID-19 cases. The suggested precautions were announced during a briefing by Anchorage Mayor Ethan Berkowitz, Anchorage Health Department Director Natasha Pineda, Pineda and trade group officials. The suggestions include closing earlier and admitting fewer customers. This is KTOO News.